Ms. McBride.
May it please the court, Judge Wilson, Ms. Messerly. I'd like you to take a mental trip with me back to the very late 1980s or early 1990s. Imagine with me the first lawyer who walked into a courtroom and said, "Judge, the state has extracted deoxyribonucleic acid from my client without a warrant, and it was an illegal search and seizure." Don't you know that judge was scratching his head?
How long ago was that?
20 years.
Okay. 89, you say?
I think it was late.
I don't remember scratching my head, but.
In the 20 years since then, the law has turned cartwheels to keep up with the scientific advances in DNA and in many other areas of scientific technology. Nevertheless, in this case, the state wants you to base your decision regarding the legality of the search incident to arrest of Mr. Deaver's cell phone on the cutting-edge technology of a 1991 Beagle.
Wait a minute. Search incident to arrest? Was it a search incident to arrest? Was he arrested at that point?
He was arrested.
And they said their search was for officer safety because they thought he was texting.
Well, the state says that, but he didn't say that.
Okay. Okay. But our question really is, one, whether it was a search. Two, whether under Gantt the search was justified given that the officer was holding the cell phone, right?
My very own issue, yes.
Okay. And the state's position is that once he was holding the cell phone, it was in plain view. Experts for both sides said, no, it wasn't in plain view. They had to actually conduct a search. And before us then is the question, I guess, whether a cell phone is a writing, a file cabinet, a computer, like a car, like a jacket. Is that what's before us now? What is the cell phone?
The issue before the court is whether under Schimmel and later under Gantt, which simply restated Schimmel, there are only two justifications for a search incident to arrest, and that those two are to protect the officer and to preserve evidence. Now, Finley, which is the case that the state relies on, it's out of the Fifth Circuit, and that's the one that is based on the 1991 beeper. Finley was based on U.S. v. Ortiz, and Finley simply adopted U.S. v. Ortiz, which had to do with a beeper, where Finley had to do with a cell phone, okay? The rationale that was used in the Ortiz case, and let me read that to you, quote, because of the finite nature of a pager's electronic memory, incoming pages may destroy currently stored telephone numbers in a pager's memory. The contents of some pagers can also be destroyed merely by turning off the power or touching a button. Now, that was very true of beepers in 1991, but it was not true of cell phones in 2007. And that's the logic in Finley, that they approved the search of the cell phone in order to prevent the destruction of the evidence that might be found in it.
And well, even though the officer testified that it was due to officer safety, which could have tied into his other testimony about he was worried that maybe he was calling for help or assistance. Didn't the officer continue, though, by saying he also thought that he was deleting messages, which there's no testimony to that effect?
No. The state asked him were you afraid that he might be deleting something or trying to contact someone? I think that's the correct wording. And he said, yes, I thought he was trying to send a message. So the state said, was it A or B? And he said, yes, it was B. Now, the state would have you believe that when he said yes, he was talking about A and B. But to me, when someone says, is it A or B, and the person says, yes, it's B, that's what they mean. So the officer never said anything about anything being deleted. It was the state's question that said that.
Okay, so, all right, this is where I am. Once the officer has the cell phone and it's in his possession, is it his to search, or does he then have to get a warrant to search it?
That's my question.
Oh, we want you to tell us what you think the answer is and what the law is that supports what you think the answer is.
Exactly. Now, again, based on Finley, which is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals case.
But that's a 2007 case, right?
2005, I think.
2005, and then the other is 2007.
But, it was simply adopted, the holding in Ortiz, which was based on the 1991 Beeper.
But Gant is a 2009 case.
And it has nothing to do with the technology of cell phones. It's talking about reining in the courts that have just gone wild, allowing searches based, all they have to do is say, well, it was incident to an arrest, and they're searching anything they want to search. The state even mentioned that in their reply brief, that basically the cops can do anything they want to and call it a search incident to arrest. And Gant is simply pulling that back in and saying, that was never what we intended in Chimmel. What we intended was that you can search if there's a danger to the officer, in other words, searching for weapons, or to prevent the destruction of evidence, not finding the evidence, but preventing the destruction of the evidence. So what we're saying here, what I'm saying, is that with this 2007 telephone, there was no chance that the evidence that might have been on it was going to be destroyed. Once the phone was in the hands of the officer, there was no chance that Mr. Deaver could do a thing to that phone. The evidence was secure once it was in the officer's hand. So the phone was no danger to the officer, and Mr. Deaver couldn't do anything about the evidence that was on it. So there was no justification under the exception for searches incident to arrest to search that phone without a warrant. Obviously, the state figured they needed a warrant because they went and got one.
Well, wasn't the officer's testimony that when he got or was handed the phone, that's when he saw a pornographic picture?
No.
No.
No, again, that's what the state has suggested. But what the testimony was the district attorney asked him, when you got the phone back, did you discover images on the phone? And he said, yes, I discovered images on the phone. And what did you do next? Next, I called the Crimes Against Children Unit. It doesn't say a word about the fact that all he did was glance at the phone and it was showing. And again, based on the testimony of the state's expert and the defense expert, it simply wasn't possible that he could glance at that thing and have it play. Because the testimony from the officer was that Mr. Deaver was punching buttons as though he were sending a text message. So he's going, and the cop grabs it. There's no way the video could have been playing if he was doing all this.
And well, then, I don't know. How do we know that? I mean, He could have been playing it so he would know which ones to delete.
Not doing like that, could you? It's a 15-second video. If he had been going like that, it either would have been deleted or it...
Let's assume for a minute that the officer appropriately got the cell phone. Seems to me that it's not really a question about electronics or is it a cell phone or not. It's a question of what if he had a small folder of pictures? Does the officer have a right to go through and look at the pictures once he has the folder? Does he have a right to go through the cell phone, which is a folder of pictures electronically, and look at them? That's the question. Let's say he rightfully obtained something. What can he do with it once he's got it?
Under Finley, if the person is holding the folder of pictures, the state can go through them.
How is that distinguished from the officer holding an electronic folder of pictures?
Well, because I think Finley's wrong. And I think Gant is going to pull it back in because, again, the purpose of a search incident to arrest is to prevent destruction. Once the cop has that folder of pictures in his hand, nobody's going to destroy it. It can't be destroyed. Okay? And if you don't mind, let me go on to the most important part of this whole discussion. A search incident to arrest is based on what the person had on him at the time of arrest. Okay? At the time of Mr. Deaver's arrest, he was sitting in the back seat of Officer Ship's patrol unit, and his phone was in the cup holder in his truck.
In his what?
In the truck.
There's a cup holder in the trunk?
Truck. Pickup truck. Okay? It wasn't on him. It was nowhere near him at the time of his arrest. After his arrest, the officer went and got the phone because he was going to take Mr. Deaver to jail, so he needed to get in touch with Mr. Deaver's ex-wife in order to have her come get the baby. The little girl, their daughter. So Mr. Deaver was under arrest before the officer went and got the phone. Then the officer brought the phone back, handed it to him, and then took it away from him and said, this is a search incident to arrest. That's...
Okay, can an officer search for evidence incident to arrest?
It depends upon what the evidence is. If it's evidence that...
Not for officer safety, not to prevent destruction of evidence, but conduct a search for evidence incident to arrest.
I don't think under Gant they can. Gant says officer safety, preservation of evidence. And again, the argument in Finley is they had to search the beeper in order to keep it from being destroyed, in order to keep the evidence from being destroyed.
Okay, then under the search incident to arrest to prevent destruction of evidence and to for officer safety, those have been held exigent circumstances, right?
Well, I don't know that officer safety has, but certainly... searching evidence that they think might be destroyed is the exigent circumstance.
Can an officer create an exigent circumstance by bringing the evidence to the defendant to create the possibility of destruction of evidence?
I would argue that's not right. That the officer created the situation that put the phone in Mr. Deaver's hand or on his person so that it was searchable under Finley. If the officer hadn't done that, the phone would have been in the truck and the state would have had to get a warrant to search it, even under Finley. And Finley is the case that the state wants you to follow. In Finley, it's a matter of is the evidence on the person of the arrestee? It wasn't. The phone was not on Mr. Deaver's person when he was arrested. The phone didn't get on his person until after he was arrested and Officer Shipp brought it to him and then took it away from him.
Your time's up, Ms. McBride.
Thank you.
Ms. Messerly?
Trying to get my papers adjusted here. I apologize. May it please the court, Ms. McBride. If you don't mind, I just want to kind of step back a little bit because the issue in this case is, was the defense counsel ineffective for not objecting to the admission of this videotape based on it being a warrantless search? And if you recall from reading the record, the defense counsels in this particular case vigorously objected to the admission of the video. They made three different objections, and I think there was about 20 pages in the record of voir dire of the expert.
Yeah, but what were the objections? Objections weren't...
You're right. No, the objections were not that it was a warrantless search. But if you don't mind, with all due respect, Ms. McBride, just before she sat down, said that the officer said that he was conducting a search incident to arrest. And there's nothing in the record to reflect that that's true. In fact, the state's position is that there was no search. And based on the record, I don't think that you can find a search in this case. I just don't think you can.
What about the expert's testimony that you couldn't get to the pornography without searching?
Well, there was two experts, and their testimony was looking through the phone, the video, 15-second video, had different frames. And what the expert said, both of them, is that if you just looked at the first frame, that didn't contain a pornographic image, that you would have to open the video or do something, and I'm not up on cell phone technology, to actually watch that video. But as Judge Livingston said, and as the officer testified, he said he gave the phone to the defendant to find the mother's phone number, that the defendant was punching buttons and scrolling for about 45 seconds. That's all we know. We don't know anything beyond that. I would argue that he was likely...
I didn't hear scrolling. I just thought punching buttons.
No, that I looked again at the record, and it definitely says texting and scrolling for 45 seconds, and that's in the record.
Do you think that he's in the back of the police car, and he decides, you know, I think I'll watch the pornographic video on my cell phone now?
No, I don't think that's what happened at all. I think there were two different cell phones in this car, in this guy's truck. The officer has the guy in his car, and he says he needs his phone to contact the mother. The officer gets the phone, brings it back to the guy to get the number. He starts scrolling and texting. He doesn't know. He's punching buttons for 45 seconds. And there's nothing in the record to indicate exactly what happened. My assumption and my guess, inference, is that he was probably trying to delete it. At that point, after 45 seconds, the officer took the phone. His testimony was that he discovered pornographic images on the phone at that time when he took it away. That's all that we know.
We don't know if he went looking through it or if he looked at it and there was a frame of the video.
All we know is that he said when he grabbed the phone, he discovered pornographic images. At that point, out in the scene, he contacted the Crimes Against Children Unit and the investigation went on from then. It seems very unlikely to me that, okay, if this officer truly was trying to search this phone, first of all, there were two phones. I mean, how did he get lucky getting the one with the video on it? I mean, he had taken the phone and put it in the console. He only got it for the defendant, for Deaver, in order to contact the mother so the mother could come and pick up the child. There's just no evidence that there's a search. There's definitely evidence that when he saw the phone, he discovered a pornographic image. But that's all we know at that point.
Okay, and the objections, and tell me if there were other objections. The objections before the trial judge were Daubert.
Yes, Daubert Kelly, that was one of them.
And best evidence rule.
That was the second one.
Now, how does this present the question of warrantless search to the trial judge to rule on?
It doesn't, Your Honor. I understand. It doesn't address the issue of a warrantless search. But what I think it does show is that the counsels here were very vigorously attempting to keep out this video. And my understanding is,
well,
in order
to get at least in the ballpark so the trial judge can rule on the right issue. I mean, was the trial judge supposed to raise the question of the warrantless search?
No, Your Honor, but we don't know why the defense attorneys, there was no motion for a new trial in this case. This issue was never litigated. The record is completely silent, as it has been in many other cases where ineffective assistance raised, as to why the defense counsel didn't object on that basis.
All right. Persons charged with possession of pornography. The pornography was on the telephone. Was he prosecuted for pornography that was someplace else?
No, Your Honor.
Only the pornography on the telephone?
It was the video on the telephone, yes.
What possible trial strategy could there be for not keeping out this the only evidence of the offense?
Well, I would argue that if the officer had searched the phone, which I don't believe he did, that it would have been a valid search incident to arrest based on the case law, that the research that I did.
Gant?
No, I don't think Gant has really any impact on this case, because this was a phone that was in this man's hand. Gant,
not after the officer had it.
Well, the officer gave it to the man. The man had it. He was the one punching and scrolling. He took it away for officer safety. I mean, the defendant was holding it. Gant, from my understanding, deals with automobile searches, containers, those type of items that are in automobiles. And my understanding is Gant says you can't go and search those items in the car unless you believe that there's evidence pertaining to the particular crime. Where in this case, we're talking about an item such as clothing, a wallet, a container that's actually on the person. And I prepared a chart, and I would be happy to file a post-submission letter brief, and I've also given a copy of it to Mr. McBride. But all over the country and the federal courts, including the Fifth Circuit, which Finley is a 2007 case, Judge Dofino, which I'm sure that's not a problem, but the Fourth Circuit, the Fifth Circuit, federal district courts all over this country have repeatedly said that searches of cell phones incident to arrest are valid warrantless searches.
After the police officer takes it away from them. Of course,
yes.
I guess they couldn't search it until they take it away from them.
Absolutely.
But those are pre-Gant cases.
Again, yes, I understand. I still don't think Gant has any effect on those cases.
What's the justification then for a warrantless search? It's per se unreasonable unless it falls within one of the exceptions. What exception does it fall within?
In this particular case?
Once it's within the officer's possession.
Well, the case law distinguishes between items that are on a person and items that are accessible, that are, you know, like such as items in a car. If there's an item on a person, case law over and over and over supports the police officer's ability to search those particular items for officer safety reasons and also so that evidence cannot be destroyed. I think in this particular case, the officer sees this guy. He believes that he's just going to pull up a number. We all have cell phones. We know that if you have a particular number plugged into your cell phone, you just find the number. It takes like 2 seconds. You just go straight to the number. This is 45 seconds of texting, pushing buttons, and scrolling.
Okay, so your position is there was no proper objection, or there was no proper objection, no objection based on the issue that's before this court, which is the warrantless search. But it wasn't ineffective assistance of counsel not to object because it was not a good objection?
My position is that there was no search. My position is that there was no need to object because any objection made on that basis would have been futile anyways. There's just no evidence that there was a search here.
What about the experts?
I don't think that contradicts our position because we just don't know what this guy was doing. I mean, why was this guy punching buttons and scrolling for 45 seconds? Why? I mean, the officer said he sees pornographic images.
Discovers.
Excuse me?
Discovers.
Discovers, exactly. Discovers pornographic images. I mean, perhaps he was trying to get rid of it. I don't know. We don't know. But my position is there's no evidence of a search here. I think even if he had searched, it would have been okay. Under Finley and under the numerous cases that support an officer's ability to search a cell phone incident to arrest. But I still just don't think there was a search here. Okay. And I just want to reiterate again that the issue here is ineffective assistance of counsel. And my understanding, and based on Judge Livingston, I think you just signed or wrote the Hill case recently, or maybe it was Judge Myers, I'm not sure. I think you were on the panel. And that particular case was one where an ineffective assistance counsel claim was made, and there were numerous claims that objections weren't made to, I think, like 10 different times. But there was no evidence in the record to show why the trial counsel did what he did. I mean, it was just completely silent. And this court said, when the record's silent, we assume that it was some type of trial strategy.
But what about that case that came down from the Court of Criminal Appeals recently? I think it was a Cochran case that said there is absolutely no trial strategy. When there is no trial strategy to justify the action or failure to act of the trial counsel, that can be ineffective assistance per se.
I think it can be if it met the second prong of Strickland, where it actually would have led to a different outcome. In this case, I just don't think it would have. I mean, I think if it had been objected to and it was overruled, I think...
How about sustained?
If it had been sustained. Well, yeah, if it had been sustained and it hadn't come in...
There'd be no conviction.
That's true. But I don't think it would have been sustained. I think that the case law supports that an officer can search a cell phone under this particular circumstance. Again, I don't think there was a search. But again, I don't think we don't know what the trial counsel strategy was here, because there was no motion for a new trial. There was no litigation on this. The record is completely silent as to what the particular strategy was. I mean, for all we know, the defendant may have said, hey, to his trial counsel, I was trying to erase this video and the guy took it away from me. Or the trial counsel could have done research as I did and seen that even if there was a search, it would have been a legal search, a legal warrantless search.
What about consent? I mean, didn't the defendant virtually tell the police officer where the phone was and could he bring it to him?
He did. I mean, yes, he actually asked for the phone. I mean, the officer... I think if you look at the record, it doesn't appear that the officer had any kind of ill motive here. I mean, he had no, from what I can tell from reading the record, he had no thoughts that this guy had a pornographic video on his phone. He had no reason to believe it, and there's no testimony up to that point about anything to do with pornography. He was under arrest for harboring a runaway, and the officer just needed to get the child taken care of, so he got the phone upon the guy's request. Hey, I need the phone. I don't know the number by memory. I can certainly get it off my phone. And then 45 seconds later, he takes it away from him. But the officer never said, I searched the phone. I think there was testimony afterwards on cross-examination. The trial counsel, the defense attorney asked him, did you do anything else with the phone? He said, no, I did nothing else with the phone. He immediately contacted the Crimes Against Children Unit and transported the children and Mr. Deaver. With the court's permission, I'm wondering later today if I would have permission to file a letter brief and just to include this chart of the cases, the federal cases that allow these searches incident to arrest of cell phones.
Yes, that's fine. And then we'll give appellant 10 days if they want to file anything additional in response.
Sure. Is there any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Messerly. Ms. McBride, rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am. I would absolutely agree with Judge Dauphineau, that and this I put this in the brief, that there is no possible justification for failing to suppress the state's only evidence. Now, again, In a search incident to arrest, whatever it is they're searching should have been on him at the time of his arrest. This phone was not on him at the time of his arrest. It was only in his possession because the officer gave it to him. And I think if you check the testimony, I'm doing this from memory here, but I think the officer said that when he got the phone, he thought he was scrolling through it, but later he started punching buttons like he was texting. And that's why he took the phone away. He was not scrolling when he took the phone away. He was punching a bunch of buttons. But he said when he first got the phone, it looked like he was scrolling through looking for the phone number. But then once he started pushing all these buttons, the officer took it away.
Did the officer ever ask if the officer could search for the phone number?
No. No. No, he just yanked the phone away. And again, counsel should have recognized that the phone was not in Mr. Deaver's possession when he was arrested. Even a cursory research mission would have gotten him to Finley, which is the only case law we have in the Fifth Circuit, and Finley doesn't apply because the phone was not on his person when he was arrested. The officer gave it to him after he was arrested. That can't possibly be okay. And further, the logic used in Finley is 1991 technology. It's time for the law to catch up with telephone technology. There's no way. Keep in mind that Detective Lawrence also said, once we get a telephone, we put it in a plastic bag that blocks all radio communication. So nobody can mess with the phone. So
Lawrence
once it was
with the Fort Worth Police Department?
Yes.
What's his first name? That's all right. Never mind.
I don't remember. It's Detective Lawrence. I don't remember his first name.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's no chance that Mr. Deaver was going to be able to send messages to the phone to delete stuff or anything like that because it was in this bag. So the chances of destruction of the evidence was simply gone once Officer Shipp had that phone in his hand. There was no justification under Schimmel, under Gant, for searching that phone without a warrant. And again, I mentioned, the state went and got a warrant. After they searched the phone, they went and got a warrant in order to search the phone. They knew they needed a warrant to search that phone. And the way they're getting around it is by saying there was no search up until they got the warrant. Well, obviously there was a search. There was no reason to take him to there's no way he could have seen that video without searching it. The both experts make that very clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McBride, Ms. Messerly. We appreciate your arguments today and your briefing. Your case is submitted. That concludes our cases for our docket this morning. If the clerk will adjourn us, please.